Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here. It's Wednesday, September 19th, 2012. It's 9:30 a.m. How are you, Carla?
I'm well, thank you.
What do you think of this somewhat fall weather?
It's okay.
It's just okay. I agree. Can you please call the roll?
Yes. Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 1027?
Request of Kelly Caldwell to address council regarding policy related to genetically engineered food.
Hi. Come on up. Welcome. Glad you're here. You just need to give us, and everyone, just give us your first and last name, no address, no phone number, just first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes, and that clock in front of you will help you count it down. If you're here representing yourself, you don't have to say anything. If you're here representing a business, organization, or something else, you need to tell us that you're lobbying on their behalf.
Great, thanks. My name is Kelly Caldwell. I'm active with GMO Free Oregon and GMO Free Portland. We failed to get genetically engineered food labeling on the Oregon ballot this year because lobbyists from the big corporate companies stymied us through the appeal process, but we're very much in support of the labeling initiative of GMO foods in California. I also happen to be running on the ballot this November for the East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District, further raising the concerns of excessive and inappropriate use of pesticides that damage our soil and water health. And one of the biggest factors in increase in pesticides in the United States has doubled their use in the last 5 to 8 years is genetically engineered foods. I'm imagining you all have at least heard of this. I don't need to give too much detail. But the risks of contamination are great, particularly right now in the Willamette Valley. Canola is, there was just a court case at the end of August. The Oregon Department of Agriculture was trying to make it be allowed to get canola, and almost all canola is genetically engineered. That would really negatively impact the financial well-being of organic farmers as well as the specialty seed companies in the Willamette Valley area. So our small businesses, our economic future is actually impacted by genetically engineered foods, although we may not be aware, and we have rights as consumers to support that. I know that there's only so much jurisdiction you have, but I want to let you know that there's activity in Benton County, Lane County, Jackson County, and the city of Ashland. The city council just took action making proclamations regarding labeling and banning of genetically engineered foods, so you would not be among the first in Oregon or all throughout the country and the world where dozens of countries actually ban or require labeling of GMOs. They contribute to allergies. Superweeds is a huge problem, I'm really concerned about the changes in soil by excessive use of pesticides. Soil bacteria is harmed. There's increased soil diseases, and the huge increase in pesticides and herbicides. There's recent data about how beneficial pollinators are hurt by genetically engineered plants. I'm hoping that you will see the relevance to the health and well-being of our humans, our natural environment, and even our economy. And I invite you to take this in particular to our public involvement processes. I think we have a great option with education and communication and feedback through our neighborhood systems and other collaborative agencies around this. Thank you.
Mayor, may I just, wanted to say to Kelly, thank you for your great work at Lift Urban Portland.
Thank you.
My colleagues remember when it was named Northwest Portland Ministries, but between the community gardens you administer and the food bank and all the hungry people you serve in Inner Northwest, you're making a big difference, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm committed especially to help folks of all income levels have access to safe, organic, healthy food. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing the issue before us. Carly, can you please read the title for item number 1028?
Request of Francis Quamps Miller to address council regarding water fluoridation concerns.
Francis Quamps Miller, are you here? Are you here? Hello? Anybody? Francis Quamps Miller? All right. Can you please read the title for item number 1029?
Request of Catherine Smith to address council regarding long-term police weapon harassment.
Catherine Smith, are you here? Hi, welcome.
The recall office.
Hello, my name is Catherine Smith. Mayor, I requested a little bit more time, about 6.5 minutes. Not possible today? Okay, I'll read it as fast as I can.
And everyone will want more time.
Okay, I'll read it as fast as I can, and hopefully this is enough information that will be helpful. My name is Catherine Smith. Mayor Sam Adams, some Tigard police officers, especially Sergeant Eskew, and Lieutenant Rose are continuing to shoot me every day with microwave harassment weapons, ultrasound harassment weapons, distraction devices, and verbally and physically harass me with voice-to-skull command weapons. My ex-Tigard neighbor lady, Tammy Larson, almost daily calls them up to tell them where to shoot me or what to say or do to me to threaten me or harass me, including death threats to me and my son. They do that when I'm in Safe's Women's Shelter, Pioneer Courthouse Square Starbucks, Multnomah County Library, in front of Multnomah County Courthouse, at First Baptist Church, St. Michael's Church in Portland, Christ the King Church in Tigard, Helen Swindell's, and other places I go. These microwave weapons, voice-to-skull weapons, ultrasound and other weapons are also in this room right here. I can often feel them burning my back and sides and head with it. I can see by some of your gestures and other people's gestures in this room sometimes that those weapons are being used on you also. A few Tigard police officers put those weapons inside and outside and around these places so they can shoot, burn, debilitate, harass, and influence people with them remotely. That is how they are able to use them on hundreds and hundreds of people. I've already tried several times to stop this more than 8 years abuse by reporting it to Tigard Police and Central Precinct Portland Police. They never investigate and rarely write up a police report about it. If they do write a police report about it, they usually say some untrue and inaccurate things to discredit what I'm saying. A few months ago, they were burning my skin and scarring me so much with the microwave weapons that I had to report it again at Central Precinct. After that, Sergeant Eskew, Lieutenant Rhodes, and other Tigard cops continued to shoot me. Also, some of the Portland police officers I'd reported these weapons assaults to said to me that they were getting orders from Police Chief Reese to cover up for this and do nothing to stop that microwave ultrasound voice-to-skull weapon and other weapon harassment to me and anyone else who reported it. So I emailed Police Chief Reese requesting a meeting so he would help stop these Tigard cops and Tammy Larson from continuing to shoot me. They also do this to my son, but usually in a more subtle way. But they also do obvious sexual abuse to my son, voice-to-skulling him and shooting him with a distraction device so he can't function sexually. Police Chief Reese never responded to my 3 emails, but he did show up the last time I reported this abuse on June 19th and basically denied that he knows knowledge of these, that he has knowledge of these weapons, and he didn't do anything to help stop the abuse. I have more details here, but I have to hurry up. I'm asking you to write a letter, please, to Police Chief Reese and Portland Police to have them stop this.
So, Ms. Smith?
Because you are the police commissioner.
Yes. And so that gentleman over there works for me. His name is Chad Stover.
Mm-hmm.
If you could follow up with him, that would be great.
Okay.
Thank you,
you
ma'am.
You mean like right now?
Yeah, he's just right there. If you could raise your hand, Chad.
Okay.
He's a really good guy.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Ms. Smith. Can you please read the title for item number 1030?
Request of Craig Rogers to address council to thank them for support regarding 2 abandoned houses near a community center and a school.
Go Welcome.
Good morning.
Give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Craig Rogers. And I want you all to have this that we can briefly look through. I'm here to give thanks and show gratitude for a job well done and your support and so much support from city employees, from policemen, the firemen that came and put out the fire, and in particular, a gentleman named Mitch McKee, who's a senior housing inspector. As these issues with abandoned homes moves forward, I think he's a good person that I would suggest you reference him for advice on how to deal with these situations, given the fact there's so many legal complexities and so forth involved. So here on the front picture is one of the two houses approximately 2 months ago that we're dealing with here. And the next picture is the house approximately 1 month ago after somebody lit it afire. And then the next picture is of no house. And believe me, you all had a lot to do, and your employees, for creating this situation. And if I may read a brief letter from my neighbors, Mayor Sam Adams and Portland City Council. Thank you very much for your prompt attention to and removal of the abandoned houses in our neighborhood. This cleanup effort will benefit everyone who takes pride in their community. We appreciate your plan going forward to assist other neighborhoods with removals of this type. Mike and Kay Engel. And I'd like to read you a letter from somebody who I got a lot of support for. This is Mark Galke, the principal of Floyd Light Middle School. Dear Mayor Adams and Portland City Council, last spring I wrote to you about a huge concern I had regarding two abandoned houses located at 10840 and 10848 Southeast Salmon Street. These derelict properties were right next to Floyd Light Middle School and become known to many of our students as a gathering place. Unfortunately, those who gathered there were often participating in illegal activities. I ask you to please look into removing these properties to help keep our kids safe. I have to admit that I was feeling just a little pessimistic about whether any action would result given the probable legal complexities involved. Lo and behold, I was wrong to feel pessimistic. As of last week, the houses are completely gone, and all the debris, including the foundations, has been removed. On behalf of Floyd Light staff, our kids and families, I thank you immensely for taking swift and decisive action. We appreciate your service and your ongoing efforts to keep our community safe.
Well, thank you for your advocacy and for those kind words. The City Council, we've been piloting, and Commissioner Saltzman is really the front person on council in dealing with these issues, but we're piloting. This effort was part of a pilot that council will consider as policy next week, 2 weeks from now. And so we piloted it here and appreciate the great feedback, the encouraging words, and any other comments on how we can improve on anything we're doing here. We want to do so. We know that these abandoned houses are all over the city. We're getting tough with them, and that means all the way and up to their removal.
Thank you for walking your talk.
And I appreciate you coming in. I just want to let you know that a few staff persons behind the scenes who were also helpful, Stephanie Reynolds in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Crime Prevention, Grace Uagbe in the Mayor's Office, and Matt Grum in Commissioner Saltzman's office, they helped connect the dots too. So it does show that what citizens can bring things to our attention, and the city does take action. Thank you so much for coming back to report
You're
on
welcome.
That.
Thank you very much.
Carla, can you please read the title for item number 1031?
Request of Hector Laura Cervantes to address council regarding unauthorized experiments and illegal testing on citizens.
Hector Lara Cervantes. All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items to pull from the consent agenda?
Yes, I'd like to pull item ...1061.
And I also was planning to pull that too.
Next. Okay. Can you please read the title for 1061?
We also have 1058 and 1066 being pulled.
Okay, 1058 and 60 what?
Six.
1006?
Mm-hmm.
1060?
1066.
1066. Sorry, can't hear you. All right, can you read those titles?
Okay. Start with 1058. Accept a grant in the amount of $400,000 from the Oregon Department of Transportation and authorize an intergovernmental grant agreement for Smart Trips Portland Streetcar. Yeah, transportation has an amendment for that.
Okay.
And 1061, declare surplus properties located at Southwest Beaverton Hillsdale Highway and Southwest Shattuck Road and at 10355 Southwest Barber Boulevard. And 1066, authorize
Carla,
a grant.
I'm sorry, let's leave 1066 on my office. I was originally not going to be here, so it was the reason I was going to pull that, but now that I am here.
You do not want it pulled?
Yeah.
Okay,
we'll take that off the pull list.
Okay. So just
is
those
that
two.
It? All right. Does anybody else wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a 9:30 time certain. It is a non-emergency ordinance. Can you please read the title for item number 1032?
Amend previously adopted regulations to support implementation and administration of the citywide tree project.
I'd like to recognize Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Commissioner Saltzman and I are pleased to bring to council these housekeeping amendments to the tree code that clear up some of the some confusion and make implementation of the citywide tree project easier for both the public and bureau staff. This work, frankly, continues an outstanding partnership between the Bureau of Development Services, Portland Parks and Rec, and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I'd especially like to recognize and thank a few key people here today. First, Commissioner Dan Saltzman, who is and has been consistently a champion for our trees and tree canopy. Second, Angie DeSalvo and Jen Cairo from Portland Parks and Rec City Nature, Rebecca Esau from the Bureau of Development Services, Roberta Jointner and Morgan Tracy, our code authors from BPS, and finally, the glue for our current effort, Mika Keenan, program coordinator for implementing the new tree code program, who works both for parks and BDS. Today's presentation is an opportunity for our outstanding team to update the council and the public on the work they have been doing since this was last before council in April of 2011, and to remind us of the implementation roadmap. I want to especially recognize our new city forester, Jen Cairo, who is leading this work for parks. Welcome to City Council, Jen. I believe this is your first presentation. I would also like to thank Hannah Kuhn and Jim Blackwood on my team for their invaluable work. And now it's my pleasure to recognize my partner in this work, Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish. It's heartening to know we've got great partnerships and cooperation between our bureaus as we move forward with this important implementation of the citywide tree project. As the commissioner overseeing the Bureau of Development Services and the Bureau of Environmental Services, I'm very excited about the work that has been accomplished to date and all the work to come. We've got some great staff focused on this, as Commissioner Fish just said. And while these housekeeping code amendments are an important step and a great example of the wisdom of this council to not rush this large policy change, it's the overall goal of an increased tree canopy and straightforward development regulations that are why this is all happening in a methodical manner. So I want to thank the staff and that continue to work on this important project as we prepare for full implementation in July of 2013. And we'll now go to a short presentation on the project and highlight some of the specific code amendments we'll be considering today. So we have with us Jen Cairo, the city's urban forester, and Mika Keenan, the development services planner. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you for hearing the amendments today. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Mika Keenan. I'm the program coordinator for Tree Code implementation. As Commissioner Fish mentioned, I was hired by both the Bureau of Development Services and Portland Parks and Recreation Urban Forestry Division to help facilitate an implementation of the new tree code. The amendments that you see before you today were identified by both the Bureau of Development Services and Urban Forestry Commission as necessary to help facilitate a smooth transition and a seamless transition to the new regulations, as well as to create a solid foundation for ongoing administration. These amendments are not intended to change any of the policies that Council adopted last April. We worked very closely with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to ensure that the intent of those regulations is consistent throughout these amendments. There's been no public opposition to these amendments. The Urban Forestry Commission and the Planning and Sustainability Commission both unanimously approved of our proposal, and they recommend Council adoption. Both of the Commission also emphasized the need for the bureaus to conduct a robust and far-reaching outreach plan to make sure that these new regulations are communicated to the general public, not just so that they know about them, but that they know how to use them come July 1st. The bureaus are committed to this outreach plan, and work is well underway. The amendments before you today, there's a total of 8 of them. They generally fall into 3 categories. Those categories are eliminate unintended consequences, clarify policy, and technical corrections. They're really designed to smooth out some of the rough edges of the new regulations. There's also 3 additional staff amendments that are recommended. These amendments were identified after the commission hearings, and they further refine the language and further clarify the policy. So in the essence of saving time, I thought I would just go over one of the amendments before you today. It's amendment number 7, which falls under the category of eliminating unintended consequences. This amendment falls in the enforcement section of the code. So as adopted, the tree code requires a corrective action for any tree violation before punitive measures will be taken. This makes a lot of sense because it gets tree canopy back in the ground quickly and eases any enforcement proceedings. For example, if a property owner were to remove a tree on their property without a permit, staff would first work with that property owner to make sure that tree got replanted. If it was appropriate, they could also pay a fee in lieu. Once that corrective action had been taken, that enforcement case would be closed. What the code inadvertently removed was the ability of staff to penalize a third-party contractor who may violate the code. So using that same example, if it was a third-party contractor who removed that tree without a permit, staff would still be working with the homeowner to make sure that the corrective action was taken. The only way we could really penalize the third-party contractor would be if the homeowner did not correct correct that action. So we wanted to make sure that we could in fact go after the third-party contractor for not doing this. It would be particularly problematic if somebody misrepresented themselves and said that a tree permit was not required, or said that they would get the permit. So the city wants to discourage this behavior by being able to impose a fine when appropriate. So this amendment adds that tool back into the enforcement section. If nobody has any questions about any of the other amendments or this one, Jen Cairo is going to talk to us a bit about some of the implementation activities.
Jen, I'm sorry.
Well, Mika, I just wanted to, I appreciate the example you used.
Yeah.
So you said if a party or a third party removes a tree without a permit, you said replant the tree, but I think you meant replant, not the tree itself, but replant it.
Replace the tree.
Replace the tree, okay.
Yes,
or
thank
pay,
you.
A fee in lieu.
So if there was not enough room on the site to replant, the other option would be to pay a fee in lieu.
Okay, so if a, if a contractor or a third-party contractor tells the homeowner this tree doesn't need a permit to be removed,
right?
You still go at the homeowner first, and then you have a right
it would
to
be,
go after the third-party contractor?
So with this amendment, you could do both. So you really still need to get that tree back in the ground, and really it's going to be the homeowner who replaces that tree. It'd be very difficult to get that third-party contractor to go back and replace the tree. But what we can do is also send them a warning and issue violations to them. Because if we couldn't do that, they could continue to go on removing trees without permits throughout the city, and we would have no way to the third party. Yeah.
Okay, so you do have a way to go after them if it's a pattern and practice of misrepresenting
right.
to clients whether a tree needs a permit for removal or not.
Right.
Okay.
That's what this amendment will do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jen, you're up next, and since you're our new city forester, and you are a big catch for parks as a new leader in city nature, could you take just one moment and tell my colleagues a little bit about your background?
Okay, sure. Yes, I'm the city
forester.
Use the microphone.
And you have to say your name.
Lift it up a bit. Yeah.
This is my first time before council, and now we all know it.
Okay.
My name is Jen Cairo. I'm the city forester. I'm also a city nature zone manager overseeing horticultural services, community gardens, and urban forestry. And my background is my education is, oddly enough, in foreign service, but then later in forestry. I have a master's in forestry and also a master's in public administration. And prior to coming to work for the city, I worked for state parks in Oregon as a region manager for them. And prior to that, I worked for the New York City Department of Environmental Protection Bureau of Water Supply as their natural resource manager in the New York City watershed. Is that what you were after?
I think my colleagues know why we were so excited that you accepted our offer. So, welcome. Oh,
thank you very much, Commissioner. Well, good morning. Thank you very much, Commissioners and Mayor, for allowing me to speak for you today. And as Mika has said, we have these amendments before you today. We also wanted to take the opportunity to update you on the status of Titles 11 and 13 implementation, which, as you know, is scheduled for July of 2013. To date, and over about a year, perhaps longer, some 25 staff and 11 volunteers have been working on that implementation. And those staff are from BDS, Parks, BES, BPS, and also BTS. The volunteers are primarily from the Urban Forestry Commission Education and Outreach Committee, and they've focused on the outreach aspects of the code implementation. As you know, Mika is our leader in all of this. I've organized our implementation efforts for your benefit into four categories, and in each category, I'll give you a very brief summary of what's been achieved to date. And also what's now in progress and what our next significant benchmark might be. The first category of the four is data management, and this primarily means changes and additions that are being made to the TRAX database, and that's the permitting database that's used by BDS and Urban Forestry. To date, we have completed identifying the specific data capture needs that the new code requires and process mapping. In other words, in each permitting situation, what information is needed, how it will be captured by whom, and at what point in the permitting process. Currently in progress is creating the scope of work and vendor contract for TRAX development, and our next benchmark is to test the system that we're going to be developing in the next few months in February and have time to modify that as needed. The second category of work to date is monitoring and evaluation. And this is basically how will we know that the new code is achieving the city's goals and where changes or improvements might be warranted in the future. To date, we've completed a draft evaluation plan. Now in progress are incorporating monitoring and evaluation elements into TRAX development and designing customer surveys to indicate service levels and customer satisfaction with our implementation and permit processing. The next benchmark will be the evaluation report template or templates that will be due in December. Our third category is processes and policies. To date, we have completed, and this is as of today, actually, we have a new online tree pruning permit. And it's free. It's the first time we've done something like this. And it's for minor tree maintenance needs, and we anticipate that this will promote good pruning practices, which are integral to long-term health and management of the city's urban canopy. It'll also improve customer service turnaround times, and we hope reduce the number of pruning permits that our staff have to deal with directly. So you can check that out today on our website. It's the first time it's there.
Which website? The Parks Bureau?
Yes, Urban Forestry Pages.
And for what kinds of pruning would the homeowner require be supposed to go get a permit online?
Currently, a pruning permit is required for any pruning of street trees in the city and public trees. The online pruning permits are just for smaller and lower limbs, not large structural limbs that would require some expertise and oversight. We have, in the past, issued a lot of these permits, and there was a lot of analysis done as to whether this was too risky to do, that there would be permanent damage to the trees, because poor pruning practices can indeed lead to tree mortality and certainly other issues, hazards, for example. And we also vetted this through a number of the local arboricultural firms and had them test it out, and we're pretty confident that the level that we're allowing this online permitting will not create those issues for us. We will be monitoring into the future. We have a monitoring plan for that. We also, to date, in the area of policy and procedure, have drafted policies for tree removal under the new code, compliance with the new code, and intake procedures with the single point of contact staff in the 1900 building. The third area is that we have, to date, also built practices to better coordinate, and this is already being implemented, between parks and BDS in day-to-day operations. For example, we now have weekly meetings set up between some of the tree inspectors and BDS permitting staff who are involved in tree work to address specific and complicated cases that they're working on. Two park tree inspectors now have regular advertised office hours each week in the 1900 building downtown. They're normally housed in East Delta Park with the Urban Forestry Group. And the tree inspectors also now receive routine notice of BDS pre-application conferences and are able to submit urban forestry input on them more easily. So now in progress for policies and procedures, parks and BDS are both currently reviewing and troubleshooting our code compliance concerns. So that's proceeding in advance of implementation of the new code or effective date of the new code. Parks will soon begin an assessment of tree inspection work distribution. The idea is to right-size the work assignments and workloads with the staff resources that we have. Parks is also developing some customer intake improvements that include, to date, a written manual for staff to use for intakes, so requests for permits and questions that come into our office. Also training for our staff, and we're getting a phone tree in the near future so that we can better handle our intake. The next benchmark.
That seems appropriate.
Yes, a phone tree.
I almost said it's so 1990s of us, but but we're going to do that. We think it'll help a lot, especially fielding emergency calls, which obviously we have to respond to a lot more quickly than some things. What they might get lost in the shuffle. So our next benchmark will be developing the inquiry response procedures for the single point of contact, and we plan to have that done by March. And last but far from least, our fourth category is outreach, and we have completed the new comprehensive City Tree website outline and general design, and there's a very large inter-bureau group that's been working on that. In progress is developing the content for that site, also developing our outreach messaging for the public about the new code and how it will affect them and what they can anticipate in July. And we are currently finalizing our outreach strategy overall. Our next benchmark for that will be outreach activity is scheduled to begin in October. So you'll start seeing a planned public presentation of what the code will be in July and how it will affect people. And that concludes our presentation on the amendments and the update on implementation. So I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any initial questions?
Well, yeah, just one question. I mean, outreach, public outreach is so important on just about anything the city undertakes that represents major policy. And certainly the citywide tree code is a major policy. Unfortunately, most people never seem to know about something until it actually hits them, like July 1st of 2013. So I guess I really want to make sure that our outreach goes beyond the usual suspects, that we're not just going to neighborhood organizations and things like that. We've got to hit the Home Builders Association of General Contractors, all those trade groups. So I want, at some point, to see the outreach plan. I want to make sure all these groups are in that schedule of outreach. So
Thank you.
Understood. We will do that. We have identified currently three broad categories of stakeholder groups and the different types of, or different levels, I guess, of detail that we'll need to provide them. We'll be happy to share that with you.
Yeah, I guess the arborists themselves are another major
They are.
Category,
They're very important. We hope that they will help us implement the new code.
Thank you very much. Has anyone signed up to testify?
We do have three people signed up.
Right.
Did you want me to also read item 1033?
Yes, please.
Amend previously adopted regulations to Title 33, Planning and Zoning, to support implementation and administration of the citywide tree project.
Ken and Mika, if you guys could grab a seat and just be available in case there's any follow-up question.
Thank you.
The three people who signed up, please come on up, are Merrill Reddish, Brighton West, and John Gibbon.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. Would you like to begin?
I would love to begin. Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. My name is Merrill Reddish, and I'm representing the Urban Forestry Commission. I just wanted to start by saying thank you for your continued support. This is an important project, and we absolutely want to do it well. And I feel confident as a commissioner that with our new city forester and with city staff and your support that we will do it well. And I'd like to just say that the Urban Forestry Commission supports the housekeeping amendments in its entirety, and we voted on that unanimously. So once again, thank you so much. We will do our part as commissioners to also ensure that the new policies and the regulations are implemented as effectively, efficiently, and with good public outreach procedures. Thank you.
Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. My name is Brighton West, and I am the Deputy Director at Friends of Trees. And just want to let you know we're going to plant 3,400 street trees this year and expect all of you to come out and plant. Some of you are going to have more time than others. So, Randy, expect you out there. Sam, I know you've got a film career going, so, you know, hopefully you'll find some time for trees. But I just wanted to say that Friends of Trees supports these amendments. We're excited about the clarification, specifically those that help protect the street trees, making it really clear that those 3,400 trees aren't going to be removed soon after planting. We're glad that you guys support trees, and we want to thank the council for your support and thank the staff for all their hard work on this. But thank you very much.
Thanks for I've been out planning with your teams a number of times, and not only is it great for the city, but it's also good fun. And thank you for helping to make it so. Hi, Mr. Gibbons.
John Gibbon. I'm here as a property owner with a question, and then with Sweeney as land use chair with an announcement dealing with outreach, which I've talked to Commissioner Salzman and Commissioner Fish about before. The question as a property owner is, I noticed that there was one change in the ordinance which I supported, which changed the it basically said that the building, the land use decision rather than a tree preservation plan will be what will control in the future if specific trees are to be protected. And that's the way I understand it. I'm concerned as a property owner because I live in a very old PUD that had a land use plan done multiple years ago, 70s era, with specific language that talked about preserving native trees. And we have no tree preservation plan, so I was not concerned about language that talked about tree preservation plans being sunsetted out or anything dealing with tree preservation plans, but I'm a little concerned that that language that says a land use decision, you know, an ancient land use decision, might spring back to life and impose a requirement on us that we really don't need. We need to have this modern system of working with the city to remove trees and not be bound up by a some very general language in a very old land use decision. And maybe staff can address that. It just, I'm not sure that I'm not one of just a few areas in the city where you might have that language lurking, but I don't think that was the intent to lock us into some old language in the past. Now, as Sweeney Chair, I wanted to talk a little bit about outreach and tell you, as of this month, we've identified the date that Sweeney will have a tree fair for the neighborhood and the property owners in the neighborhood, because frankly, we think that one of our biggest problems in Southwest Portland is going to be the well-meaning neighbor with chainsaw. So on April 30th, 2013, we're scheduled at Multnomah Center to have a tree fair. And we hope that there will be people from Urban Forestry, BDS, BES, and ONI there to talk about their tree programs, put on presentations so we can get the neighborhood taken care of. And I have one question that maybe City Attorney can talk to me about in regard to this. We've obtained a list of trained tree service providers from Urban Forestry, and I want to know for sure as we organize this plan, because I've got volunteers working.
You're out of time. I need you to wrap up.
One question.
Yes.
Is there any restriction on Sweeney using your list of these firms that have gone through the training to ask them to sponsor tables at our tree fair and get their services out to the residents?
Why don't you talk to staff offline?
Thank you.
On both
I'd,
those
I'd say by all means.
Yes. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Any additional comments on either 1032, 1033?
Mayor, if I could, we're going to be voting on this next week, which means we will not have most of the staff here to thank. And I just want to, again, echo what Commissioner Saltzman and I said at the beginning. Unprecedented level of collaboration across bureaus. And we're very proud of the strong partnership between Parks, Bureau of Environmental Services, BDS, and DPS. And I think the mayor's been working on regulatory reform for 18 years. I think, and I saw him, his whole demeanor changed when Jen was talking about this online permit thing.
I like it.
So I think it's an early contender for the first annual Sam Adams Award for Regulatory Reform. But what you heard was a short version presentation of an incredibly complex process. And Dan and I are so proud of the professionals that we get to work with who are leading this effort. I just want to say thank you.
Great. Commissioner Fritz.
I also wanted to thank everybody who's worked on this for literally decades. Margot Barnett is here, who helped with Greg Shifsky to get this going when I was still a community activist, doing far more tree plantings than I currently have time for, unfortunately. But very much appreciate our community partners also. This is an example of how not only the commission form of government is working very well, but also our partnerships with the community are also evidenced in the beauty of our trees and in the beauty of our revised regulations in streamlining and making them more accessible and understandable for all sections of the community, whether it's home builders or homeowners, residents, others. And this is a really great project, and it has been very long time in working on it, but it shows that sometimes good things do take the right amount of time to make sure that we get things right in the end. So thank you all.
I'd just like to add my thanks to all the hard work, and there's plenty of hard work ahead, and a lot of that will be in figuring out to make sure that the bureaus continue to cooperate in a spirit of let's get this thing done and get it done right and make sure it's done in a way that most of all serves our public, our customers. So that's going to be the guiding principle as we continue to work hard. I want to particularly thank Matt Grum in my office, and also can't help but note that we have Ann Nato Campbell in the audience, and this seems very fitting given her father, Bill Nato, was such a leading spirit and leading force for preserving trees in the city of Portland. I know she's here for another item, but can't help but acknowledge her presence too, and through her father's presence. So this is great.
Thanks for all your great work. Yes, I am. I have OCD over unnecessary red tape that stands in the way of accomplishing good things. So I really laud the commissioners and all of you for the work here. It's really great. All right, moves to second reading for the consideration, both items next week. Can you please read the title for item number, it's a resolution, item number 1034.
Promote suicide counseling services offered by Oregon Partnership Lines for Life.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an exciting partnership which has grown out of the work that's been done for the past couple of years with the Safer PDX project and also my background having been a nurse working in psychiatry at OHSU for 22 years before I was elected. I'd like to invite our partners to come up to the table. Suicide is a tragedy which is often preventable. And Oregon Partnership Lines for Life has been the experts in helping people manage their challenges in this regard and in taking over 19,000 calls a year from people who are contemplating suicide and other mental health crisis situations. And 98% of the time, Lines for Life is able to de-escalate and comfort and provide support so that the call does not have to be referred to 911. In contrast, our 911 operators are trained to dispatch providers, first responders, as quickly as possible. And although we have many, many great call takers and dispatchers in the Bureau of Emergency Communications, they simply don't have the time that's often needed to spend helping folks in mental health crisis. So we have, in the past 6 months, developed a protocol that crisis calls coming to 911 are transferred to the Multnomah County Call Center with a warm transfer so we don't put people on hold. That also requires an intensive time. And again, Lines for Life are the experts in the community on how to help in these situations. So we are today announcing a new program supported by general fund dollars to provide to... I'm so excited about this, I can't even just get the words out properly. because we want people to not call 911 if they're in mental health crisis and if their family members are in struggling. This resource is for everybody so that we do what we need to do to help folks in their crisis. So with that, I will ask the panel to introduce themselves and take it away.
Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor Adams. We appreciate you having us here this morning. My name is Dan McMillan. I have the honor of serving as the chair for the board of Lines for Life, and I think Commissioner Fritz maybe couldn't have done a better job of summarizing the topic. I'll only add that in the capacity as board chair, I get the privilege of serving on an organization that proves every day that suicide is preventable. And it's a reality that we see all the time. And when you think about that and you think about the number of suicide calls coming into the city over the last 10 years, and that number has doubled during that time period, you're talking about what some people call an epidemic. And it is heartening to us to see the actions that have been taken around this, knowing that, as Commissioner Fritz said, that the infrastructure and the resources in 911 are not equipped or even designed to take these kind of calls, that there's been a decision made here to divert those, and with that, I'll turn it over to, Ed Blackburn, who's going to talk more detail about what that looks like.
Now, Ed Blackburn, Central City Concern, and a great admirer of the Oregon Partnership. We've had a relationship going back many years, and it's just a really great organization, very innovative, and I think this is exactly the kind of thing we should be doing in terms of trying to get better care at a lower cost and a better experience for those people seeking care. Yeah, I think it's the way to go. I want to say, from Central City Concern, we serve and house a lot of highly vulnerable people. And many of those people experience episodes where suicide becomes a real possibility in their thinking. And it's a real tough thing as a provider to discover someone who has committed suicide in one of the buildings. And you see the tragedy of the potential of that person's life not being realized. You see the family members and the distraught and traumatized by it. And also your staff. It's a very difficult thing for our staff to deal with. So I can't tell you how important this type of service is to us, because every day Oregon Partnership is preventing people that I'm sure we're serving, but also others other agencies in the community that are serving, who are so vulnerable to this this awful thing. They do a great job. They're really a jewel. So I'm here, unequivocal support. Thank you.
Ms. Cushing.
Good morning. My name is Judy Cushing, and I'm CEO of Lions for Life, formerly Oregon Partnership. And we're so honored to have an opportunity to partner with the City of Portland on this important project. This is such a serious and critical issue, and our crisis counselors are so highly trained to develop rapport with the callers who call us. There's absolutely no time limit. If someone is struggling and they need to talk for an hour, they can talk for an hour. We assess their risk for suicide and other risks that they're dealing with. We listen to their reasons for calling, as well as actively support their and help them realize their reasons for living. For those callers who are struggling with serious mental illness and depression, we are that listening ear and that compassionate friend on the other end of the line to help them get help. We do this pretty quietly, and we were so honored when Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Salzman came to visit us to see what we were doing, and to think that you have taken this kind of action, which is significant. As Ed said, we've had a long-standing relationship with Central City Concern and the other providers in Portland who are serving those who are suffering from mental illnesses, suicide ideation, and addiction. They're really all linked. We value those partnerships and see us as that bridge to for that individual to get long-term help, although I will tell you about 43% of our individuals who call the line who are suicidal may have a recurrence of that suicide ideation, and we do follow-up calls, which is pretty unique in the country. We're one of a cohort of six in the country doing that work now through a federal grant. We are here for the citizens of Portland. We are here 24/7, and we actually have had a long-standing relationship with law enforcement, because law enforcement has been confronted, as you know, with dealing with a lot of individuals who have serious mental illness, and our law enforcement officers are not trained extensively to do that. And I know that Chief Reese is significant changes are coming down the pike to address that. But ironically, we have had the opportunity to train the hostage negotiation team and the new team members for the Portland Police over the last several years. And as a give back, they volunteer on our lines once a month. And it is an incredible experience. You can't imagine how much our team has learned from them, and they have learned from us. And Chief Reese told me this morning that he wants every Portland police officer to go through that same training. So we're excited about that. We are thrilled to be able to help the City of Portland, but mainly you're doing the heavy lifting in promoting the brand new number. 503-972-3456. You might ask why a number like this. It's this number because it's a more memorable number, because, as you know, with cell phone technology today, we don't all have alphabetical on alphabets on our keypad. So Portlanders can call 1-800-SUICIDE, which is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which we have provided for the last several years, and they can call 503-972-3456. Our goal, as is your goal, is to decrease the number of calls from individuals who have suicide ideation and serious mental health issues from calling 911, and instead call professionals who can help them. Thank you.
Thank you.
And these signs, maybe you can hold the sign up again, are going to be on our bridges, right?
Correct. There are two major outreaches, and I'd like to thank Coates and Coates and Cokes for doing the artwork, and the Bureau of Transportation for coming up with the actual signs. They'll be up on the bridges. We'll work our own bridges immediately, and then the city, county, and state and federal bridges following that. And then there's also a version of this that it's slightly different in terms of the message, but the call to action is the same. So for more information, folks can also look at linesforlife.org. And I'd just like to underscore one of the reasons I think it's smart to put both numbers up is, you know, 70% of those experiencing suicidal thoughts are either also suffering from depression, mental illness, substance abuse. And so if someone in your life you are worried about their mental health, but you don't know exactly what to do, also call the 503-973-3456 and get advice. You're not preventing Lines for Life from talking to somebody else. This is a key part of the service we're providing. It's one of the most preventable injuries and deaths in the state.
And so the 503-972-3456, that goes directly to Lines of Life.
That's correct.
Right here in Portland. So
you have a special...
people are talking to people right here in Portland.
Absolutely. It's a dedicated line for the city of Portland.
Thank you very much. We're going to take some testimony. If you could hang around. Has anyone signed up?
Yes, we have four people signed up.
Okay.
Please come on up. Patty Jo Northstar, Jenny Mill, Kathleen Drake, and Veronica Bernier.
Good morning. My name is Patty J, and Mary Adams and Commissioners, great to see you, man. Great to see you again. I'm on staff for an organization called North Star. We serve and are very excited to find some more help for the people of the population that Lifelines serves. Our mental health organization, North Star, also deals with mental illness, mental wellness, actually. We're trying to change the verbiage. Anything that can help folks to know that there's resources out there, obviously having a phone number that they can call rather than 911 is very exciting on both ends. I think offering hope to folks, North Star being one of them also, that they need to have a place to go, that there's a audience of people that get them, that we're peers, that we understand, but that we also have another resource that this suicide prevention number can, that we can give out to folks is very exciting. So I just want to say I'm so excited to see this partnership, and thank you for all your hard work in this. Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning. My name is Kathleen Drake, and I'm also a member of North Star. And I really support the Lifelines because of the fact that I myself, within the last year, have gone from a certified alcohol and drug counselor to someone with a mental illness. And so I have lived the experience of someone actively trying to cope with a mental health issue, and this Lifelines is so valuable because I saw it as a counselor and as a case manager when I was referring people, trying to gain them access for help, and then I myself needed the access. So I'm really, appreciative of this happening, and hope that the ties will continue to strengthen and that more services will be available for those with mental health as well as addiction issues, because it is a growing issue all over the country. So thank you.
Thank you both for taking the time to come in. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. It's good to see you again.
And thanks for sharing your story with us. It's very inspiring.
Thank you.
Veronica, welcome back.
Good morning, America. How are you? It's good to see you. It's always good to see you. Mayor Sam Adams, I love seeing your smiling face up here. You're always in such a good mood, and I enjoy it, definitely. Good morning, Randy. How are you? Good. You had a nice little break or a little vacation. I hope you got a little bit of time off.